Moving now to the nation and world, we begin with an article from page 812 titled, War in Ukraine, Trump to Putin, quote, Stop. President asked Russia to halt attacks, says it made big concession. This article is written by Amir Madhani and Samuel Petriquin of the Associated Press. Dateline, Washington. President Donald Trump offered rare criticism of Vladimir Putin on Thursday, urging the Russian leader to, quote, stop after a deadly barrage of attacks on Kyiv, Ukraine's capital. I am not happy with the Russian strikes on Kyiv. Not necessary and very bad timing. Vladimir, stop. 5,000 soldiers a week are dying, Trump said in a post on his social media platform. Let's get the peace deal done. Russia struck Kyiv with an hours-long barrage of missiles and drones. The attack killed at least 12 people and injured 90 in the deadliest assault on the city since last July. Trump's frustration is growing as a U.S.-led effort to get a peace agreement between Ukraine and Russia has not made progress. Trump lashed out at Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Wednesday and accused him of prolonging the, quote, killing field, unquote, by refusing to surrender the Russia-occupied Crimean Peninsula as part of a possible deal. Russia illegally annexed that area in 2014. Trump appeared to suggest Putin did himself no favors toward achieving the Kremlin's demand that any peace agreement include Russia keeping control of Crimea as well as Ukrainian territory in Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson regions it seized since invading in February 2022. Later Thursday, during an Oval Office meeting with Norwegian Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre, Trump said Crimea was taken from Ukraine without a fight. He also noted that annexation of the Ukrainian peninsula happened under President Barack Obama's watch. Asked what Putin is doing now to help forge a peace deal, Trump responded, "Stopping taking the whole country. Pretty big concession." But the notion is one that Ukraine and much of Europe fiercely pushed back against, arguing that Russia pausing a land grab is hardly a concession. Zelensky repeated many times that recognizing occupied territory as Russia's is a red line for Ukraine. He noted Thursday that Ukraine agreed to a U.S. ceasefire proposal 44 days ago as a first step to a negotiated peace, but that Moscow's attacks continued. Trump's criticism of Putin is notable because Trump has repeatedly claimed Russia is more willing than Ukraine to get a deal done. I didn't like last night, Trump said of Russia's massive attack on Kyiv, which led to him criticizing Putin. I wasn't happy with it. In that article, from page 12, was written by Amir Madhani and Samuel Petriquin of the Associated Press, titled War in Ukraine, Trump to Putin, Stop. Richard?
And continuing with Nation and World News from page 812, the next story, titled Illinois Killer Gets Life Sentences. Cremo will die in prison after leaving seven dead at parade. This is written by Sophia Tureen of the Associated Press. Dateline, Waukegan, Illinois. The suburban Chicago man, who admitted to fatally shooting seven people and wounding dozens of others during a 2022 Independence Day parade, was sentenced Thursday to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Lake County Judge Victoria Rossetti handed down seven sentences of life prison for Robert Cremo III, age 24, as prosecutors requested, for the first-degree murder charges after hearing emotional testimony from survivors and the relatives of those killed in the shooting. She also sentenced Cremo, who did not attend the two-day hearing, to 50 years for 48 counts of attempted murder. This court has absolutely no words that could adequately describe and capture the horror and pain that was inflicted on July 4th, the judge said. She said Cremo, quote, is irretrievably depraved, permanently incorrigible, irreparably corrupt, and beyond any rehabilitation. The proceedings have been marked by unpredictable behavior, including Thursday when Rossetti briefly paused the hearing because Cremo changed his mind and was being escorted to the hearing. However, his defense attorneys later said it was for an unrelated issue and he went back to his jail cell. Cremo also declined to offer a statement to the court through his attorneys. The judge ordered consecutive sentences and Cremo, quote, will die in prison, unquote, said his public defender Gregory Tixey. He's always known that he was facing life in prison, Tixey said. Dozens were wounded in the shooting in the suburb north of Chicago. They ranged in age from their 80s to an 8-year-old boy who was left paralyzed from the waist down. Cremo pleaded guilty last month just before jurors were due to report for opening statements. He previously backed out of a plea deal, fired his public defenders, and reversed his decision to represent himself. He signed his name and Donald Trump's when he waived his right to trial. Cremo also skipped several hearings despite warnings from Rossetti that the case would proceed without him. Again, the story titled Illinois Killer Gets Life Sentences was written by Sophia Tureen of the Associated Press. Carol.
Our next article comes from page A12 also, titled Courts Block Trump, Anti-DEI Funding Threat. Administration Wants Diversity Programs at Public Schools to End. By the Associated Press. Dateline Concord, New Hampshire. A federal judge blocked Trump administration directives Thursday that threatened to cut federal funding for public schools with diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The ruling came in a lawsuit brought by the National Education Association and the American Civil Liberties Union, which accused the Republican administration of giving, quote, unconstitutionally vague, end quote, guidance and violating teachers' First Amendment rights. A second judge on Thursday postponed the effective date of some U.S. Education Department anti-DEI guidance, ruling in a separate case filed by the American Federation of Teachers in Maryland. In February, the department told schools and colleges they needed to end any practice that differentiates people based on their race. This month, it ordered states to gather signatures from local school systems certifying compliance with civil rights laws, including the rejection of what the federal government calls, quote, illegal DEI practices, end quote. The directives do not carry the force of law, but threaten to use civil rights enforcement to rid schools of DEI practices. And that article, again, titled Courts Block Trump Anti-DEI Funding Threat, came from us from the Associated Press out of Concord, New Hampshire. Back over to you, Richard.
Also from page A12, federal judge pauses Trump election overhaul. U.S. president wants proof of citizenship requirement for all. And this story is from the Associated Press. Dateline Charlotte, North Carolina. State and local election officials from around the country on Thursday questioned the leaders of a federal agency directed by President Donald Trump to implement parts of his sweeping election overhaul executive order, with some expressing concerns about the consequences for voters and the people in charge of voting. The U.S. Election Assistance Commission, an independent and bipartisan federal agency, is at the center of Trump's March 25th order that directs the commission to update the voter registration form to include a proof of citizenship requirement and revise guidelines for voting systems. Trump also wants it to withhold federal money from any state that continues to accept ballots after Election Day, even if they are postmarked by then. A federal judge issued a preliminary injunction Thursday blocking the proof of citizenship requirement from moving forward while the legal challenges play out. U.S. District Judge Colleen Collar-Cotelli in Washington sided with voting rights groups and Democrats, saying that the Constitution gives the power to regulate federal elections to states and Congress, not the president. And again, this is titled Federal Judge Pauses Trump Election Overhaul, and that is by the Associated Press on page A12. And back to Carol.
Now we're going to move to a couple of articles from the Digest, Nation and World. The first one titled, Trump Ordered to Fix Second Deportation Era. Washington. A federal judge ordered President Donald Trump's administration to facilitate the return of a man who was deported to El Salvador last month, despite having a pending asylum application. U.S. District Judge Stephanie Gallagher in Maryland ruled Wednesday that the government violated a 2019 settlement agreement when it deported the 20-year-old man, a Venezuelan native identified only as Christian. Gallagher cited another federal judge's order for the government to facilitate the return of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who was living in Maryland and was wrongly deported to his native El Salvador on March 15th. Gallagher said she recognizes that her ruling in Christian's favor, quote, puts this case squarely into the procedural morass that has been playing out very publicly across many levels of the federal judiciary, end quote, in Abrego Garcia's case. Next Digest article, Judge, Sanctuary City's order is unconstitutional. San Francisco. A federal judge in California barred the Trump administration from denying or conditioning the use of federal funds to sanctuary jurisdictions, ruling Thursday that parts of President Donald Trump's executive orders were unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge William Orrick issued the injunction sought by San Francisco and more than a dozen other municipalities that limit cooperation with federal immigration efforts. Orrick wrote that defendants are prohibited from directly or indirectly taking any action to withhold, freeze, or condition federal funds, and the administration must provide written notice of his order to all federal departments and agencies by Monday. And those two were articles from the Digest of the Nation and World page, page A12 of the Times-Dispatch. Richard?
And we've got one more local news story here. UR unveils memorial for enslaved buried on campus. And this is by Eric Kalinich of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. 7 years after a University of Richmond researcher discovered that enslaved laborers were buried on campus, the university has created a permanent memorial for them. On Wednesday, the UR unveiled almost $4 million stone wall adorned with images of faces, engraved messages, and a water feature to mark the area known as the burying ground. The memorial is an effort to show respect to the enslaved people who lived and died there after the university neglected them for decades. The memorial turns the grassy space into a proper cemetery, said Bert Pinnock, who leads the cultural studio at Baskerville, the architecture firm that designed the structure. The memorial at 112 UR Drive is free and open to the public. Before it became the University of Richmond, the hill heading down to West Hampton Lake was part of a nearly 5,000-acre plantation called Westham that was owned by Ben Green, a prominent Richmond businessman and slave owner. When the university bought the land in 1910, school leaders knew there was a cemetery on campus. A topographical map that the Olmsted Brothers firm drew in 1901 marks the spot as a, quote, graveyard. In 1912, while builders were constructing a road called Richmond Way, they found at least 20 graves in the road's path. The law at the time prohibited building over graveyards, but the president of the school's board of trustees, J. Taylor Ellison, told the landscape architect there would be no more legal trouble. So the road was built, and any markers that might have identified graves were gone. It is unclear what happened to the human remains that had been buried there. The university stumbled upon graves again in the 1940s and 1950s, but kept building anyway. By the 21st century, the university had mostly forgotten about the cemetery. Around 2018, a researcher named Shelley Driscoll rediscovered the cemetery by piecing together topographical maps, newspaper clippings, and university correspondence. She published a 20,000-word report in early 2020. The university assembled a committee, reached out to possible descendants, and held conversations about how URs should preserve the land. Brenda Dabney Nichols, a local author, represented the descendant community. The university continued to grapple with the legacy of slavery. In 2021, students and faculty protested the names of two buildings on campus associated with slavery and racism, but school leadership stood pat and resisted change. A year later, the school finally relented and changed the names of six buildings, including facilities named for Robert Ryland and Douglas Southall Freeman. For the burying ground, UR decided it wanted space to remain sacred and lightly touched, to be accessible, and to evoke feelings of reconciliation. Last year, work was paused when builders thought they had discovered more grave sites adjacent to the cemetery. The university received a permit to excavate human remains from the ground and rebury them in the cemetery. When they broke the ground, they discovered there were no human remains there after all. Construction began in May last year and finished last week. The almost $4 million cost, including construction, archaeology, design, and engineering. "I take projects like this extremely personal," said Devin Henry, who leads Team Henry Enterprises, the contractor that oversaw the construction work. And we're going to take a short break now, and then we will be back with today's birthdays, followed by opinions and letters to the editor, and then more news.